Welcome to Vital Voices. Our guest today is journalist Laura Sullivan, the host and producer of a new NPR PBS Frontline documentary entitled Hurricane Helene's Deadly Warning. Hurricane Helene has quickly become a defining moment in our discussion of climate change, as regions that once seemed safe from hurricanes have seen 70-mile-an-hour winds and unprecedented destruction from flooding and mudslides. NPR and Frontline have since learned that more than 2.5 times as many Americans live in dangerous, disaster-prone areas than the government currently reports. At the same time, 70% of towns and communities in the U.S. have building codes that are out of date. Laura Sullivan made several visits to Western North Carolina to work on the new documentary. Laura, you arrived in Western North Carolina, I believe, 5 days after Hurricane Helene swept through that region. Describe for me what you saw during those first few hours when you were on the ground.
This was a devastation that, unlike anything that I had seen in 20 years of covering this kind of disaster, in the sense that this was, you know, so much rain had come down these steep hills, just a deluge of rain. Some of the mountains had come down the mountains in these landslides, and it had all funneled into this, in some cases, a 26-foot wall of water that was just slamming down through communities. And this wasn't the kind of storm where, you know, there's water that rises up in a house and then it dissipates back down. This was a force of destruction, and homes had been just turned into matchsticks. There were semi-trailers and trees and whole trees, a whole field of trees pulled up from its roots and just laying down flat, you know, just on top of one another, just all laying down in the same direction. It was the force and nature of this storm was so significant, and it had really wiped out, in some cases, whole communities that were just devastated. And so when we were standing there, we were really trying to figure out, what do communities, are American communities ready for this kind of storm, which is hitting places that had never had storms like this before? And how do communities recover from these disasters?
Let's make it clear, you had covered a number of hurricanes prior to Helene.
Yeah, it goes way back. I remember standing in the floodwaters of Katrina, you know, 20 years ago. And you've seen changes over the years. FEMA was a disaster during Hurricane Katrina. I mean, they could not get people's debris removed for months. I mean, they couldn't get people into any sort of housing. They couldn't figure out how to get checks out. It was a complete catastrophe. And you've seen, and we've seen FEMA do a better job over the years at getting that debris removed, getting those checks out to people. But the bigger questions about what role the federal government should have in disaster recovery and the decisions that get made for how we recover from disasters are as complicated as they've ever been.
What impressed you the most about the hurricane survivors that you met in Western North Carolina?
Western North Carolina is an amazing place, full of grit, full of just can-do attitude, just people who were ready to rebuild their communities. And that was remarkable. And as often as you do find in these disasters, communities often rally together. But it seemed especially true that there was not a moment wasted. People grabbed their chainsaws and they went out to the road and they cleared it themselves. You know, there was so much of this going on. And we had a chainsaw in our truck too. And by the time we got out to some of these back roads, somebody was already out there doing it. There was just this real spirit of, like, everybody get in and get your hands dirty and we can rebuild. There was a real sense of what to do now. You know, there was this, you could feel over the next 7 months, this intense pressure to rebuild, to get the community back. But there was also this concern of, is this an opportunity to build in a different way, especially if there is some grant money or if there is the flood insurance program? Could people build in a way that will make them safer the next time the storm hits? And that is where it gets real difficult and people get real passionate about this and how to do this.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that in a minute, but take us to the Swannanoa, North Carolina area and tell us about the Ramseur family, Nola and Robert, and their story.
We had gone out to this trailer park that was built right next to the Swannanoa River. And this couple, Noah and Robert Ramseur, lived probably 50 or 60 feet from the river's edge. They were in a trailer that was maybe a foot or two off the ground. And their daughter had come out to the trailer to try to find her parents. And she sort of arrived, you know, kind of like, they must be somewhere, you know, let me figure this out. She thought, well, maybe they left a note in the trailer. She hadn't heard from them. And she's kind of, as she's looking at this, she starts walking and she's explaining that she hadn't heard from her mother since 7:30 in the morning, the night of the storm. And she's kind of doing this like mental math in her head, you know, looking for a clue. Well, how long is that? And how long would it take them if they lost their phones to get to phone service and contact me, kind of thing? And she's pointing to their cars and she's saying, well, there's my dad's Jeep and there's my mom's red car. And I, you know, so they didn't, you know, what could have happened? And by the time she gets to the trailer, you know, this place, it looks like the apocalypse. And she gets to their trailer and she can see that the entire wall of the trailer is blown off. Something has hit it, you know, and there's now a black pickup truck is like wedged under one side. And the wall is missing to the trailer and all the furniture smashed down into the side. And she climbs into the trailer and she starts to realize that the water line is almost, you know, up to the ceiling in the trailer. And I asked her, do you think that your parents may have gone into the water to try to escape? And, you know, she said that my parents couldn't swim. And I think she just broke down because it became pretty clear that there were very few options for her parents and what would happen to them. And in the idea that you're going to wade out into the water, this was like mud brown whitewater rapids with semi-trailers floating by. I mean, and trees and cars are floating by. Homes are floating by you. You can't just jump into this water. And there's nowhere to swim to. It's all water. There's no dry land. There's no island of safety anywhere. It's just a free-for-all. And eventually, you know, she would walk up and down the river for 6 weeks trying to find her parents. And she said she would always stop at this one bridge where all the homes and cars had kind of been piled up and pieces of people's lives and linger there. And 6 weeks later, she got the notice from the medical examiner's office that her parents had been found. They'd been found a mile down the river apart. And when she got the report, she found that her mother's body was at that bridge.
This gets at one of the central themes of the documentary. The property where the Ramseurs lived later comes up for sale. And the real estate listing described it like it was some sort of paradise with abundant river frontage.
It does. Abundant river frontage. Yeah, it said, don't miss this opportunity. And it said that it would be a good place to reestablish a mobile home park, a trailer park. Again, we asked some of the folks in the community, the Buncombe County Planning Director, and we would say to him, you know, can you make the rules different? Can you change the standards? Can you rebuild here now in a different way? And the answer is no, you can't. And in North Carolina, so much of those decisions are left up to the state lawmakers at the state capitol. And what we found is that a lot of them are making the decisions based on what special interests want, the Home Builders Association, for one.
I think at one point you say that the state's building codes in North Carolina are among the most outdated in the country.
FEMA rates North Carolina a 0 out of 100 for its hazard resistance building, and it calls North Carolina's codes outdated. Efforts over the past 10 years to try to update those codes, bring them up to the most current standards, have fallen flat. And we saw a lot of lobbying efforts on behalf of the North Carolina Home Builders Association to make sure that that didn't happen. And critics say, you know, look, this has left the community more vulnerable to storms. The Home Builders Association says they're just trying to keep homes affordable.
Final question. In terms of preparation for future disasters, whatever their kind, what warnings from Helene should we be heeding and how?
There is not a lot of guidance that's going to come down from the federal government and in a lot of cases from states and local communities who don't have the ability to make these choices either. Homeowners who are building or are doing a renovation on an old home need to think about themselves and think about how they are going to survive this storm and understand that just because you're not in a FEMA map doesn't mean that the storm's not coming for you. Only 2% of people in Western North Carolina were in the FEMA flood maps. 98% were not. So it's really up to Americans to think this through for themselves and figure out what their own risk is and how they're going to survive this and how they can build in a way that will help them survive.
Laura Sullivan, thank you for joining us for Vital Voices.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's turn back now to the fall of 2024. This is one of NPR's earliest stories about Hurricane Helene, filed by NPR's Jennifer Ludden from Poplar, North Carolina, on October 8th, 2024.
You know, during all the days when there was political discussion about whether people affected in Appalachia by Hurricane Helene were getting enough attention, during all those days of debate, they were getting attention, thanks to this public radio network that many of you support. NPR member stations are throughout Appalachia. They've been covering the story, and so have NPR network reporters. For some of the most isolated areas, people in the mountain hamlet of Poplar, North Carolina, for example, restoring power may take months. NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports on the preparations.
Poplar's community center is now a food and water pantry, bustling with cars and helicopters for drop-off and delivery. Misty Hughes is coordinating all of it.
Do you know the horseshoe curve back the other way after you go through the mud?
She says fewer than 300 people live here, and the ties to this place go back generations, five in her case. The community sits along the beautiful Nolichucky River, popular for whitewater rafting. When it rose up violently, Hughes's home survived, but her aunt and uncles did not.
They ran. They ran out with the clothes on their back and their bows in their late 70s.
Hughes says most people here are seniors, and she's worried about them.
They're sticking with it. It's not the first time they've sat in the dark. That's a quote. So they're going to rough it.
But the last estimate she got was that it could be up to 5 months without electricity, phone lines, or internet. So she's scouting for propane and kerosene heaters to see people through the cold, dark winter.
These elderly that once used wood stoves have aged to the point that they're unable to supply that need for themselves.
Another priority, medication. Rick Hughes, no close relation to Misty, he says, has a 94-year-old mother with high blood pressure.
So we're not even staying in our house right now. We're staying in her house, trying to keep a generator going. And Jeff goes to the hospital a lot, so we're just trying to keep her calm.
One major source of help for Poplar, the paddling community that's long passed through here to raft the Nolichucky. River educator Trey Moore has been rounding up donations, supplies, and volunteers.
Yeah, what I hope for is that now my neighbors know me and that we're friends, and that some of us are going to become family through this.
Moore drives up the road to where he would put boats in the river. It's now a wasteland of deep, muddy silt. In the middle of it is his friend and fellow paddler, Patrick Toops.
There he is. Digging with a shovel.
Until Helene hit, Toops lived on this spot in a house built in 1910. He retreated up the hill and watched the floodwaters rise.
That house picked up in one beautiful piece. It floated out upstream into the eddy, completely majestic, like a ballerina.
Toops is now staying in his workshop, not ready to give up on this place he loves. Down another road, volunteers on ATVs check on an older couple. Gerald Peterson says they could use more gasoline for the generator.
I'll run down there and get you some real quick, all right?
The Lord will bless it for you.
They're lucky to have a water well, he says, but he sure misses hot showers. Inside the house, his wife, Jewel, says she is making do.
And we have a grill that we heated water on to do dishes and bathe and all in. You know, when you live in the mountains, you kind of do things different.
She says that means being prepared. Peterson is thankful her husband dug up the potatoes before the flood. She's canned food, and as long as the generator holds out, the freezer is full. Jennifer Lutton, NPR News, Poplar, North Carolina.
And our thanks again to Laura Sullivan, our guest today on Vital Voices. Laura is an NPR News investigative correspondent who has covered a number of natural disasters, including hurricanes Sandy and Katrina, and the aftermath of the earthquake in Haiti. Before coming to NPR, Laura Sullivan was a Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun newspaper, where she covered the Justice Department, the FBI, and terrorism. She has reported on inequalities in the American healthcare system and how those inequalities were affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2016, she collaborated with Frontline as a correspondent for an hour-long documentary examining the profit-driven nature of the insurance business after disasters. Remember that you can download any of our Vital Voices programs by going to WETS.org, then Programs, then Podcasts. Vital Voices is heard every Saturday morning at 7 and Sunday afternoon at 2, right here on WETS. For Vital Voices, I'm Fred Sausman.